Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. This is another episode of The War Room with PMAC. I am your host, you, a.k.a. Thiz, and that is your main man, Philip, a.k.a. PMAC, and we are here on The War Room. What up, Philip?
Yo, what's going on? What's up, everybody? Hey, man, thank you, Thiz, and thank you guys for jumping on here today on another episode of The War Room with PMAC presented by Chiefs Focus. It's been a wild year in terms of the free agency period and draft preparation, as it is in every other area. And in this new series, Thiz and I will provide you guys and the viewers front office insight into the offseason needs for the Chiefs, identifying how putting the right pieces together will lead to success next season, hopefully becoming the first team in NFL history to three-peat.
Real deal. Real deal, Holyfield. And that's the goal here. Not necessarily to take Brett Veach's place because he's doing a great job himself, but just to kind of pinpoint where he may or may not go in this offseason and how it affects what this three-peat actually could mean for the Chiefs franchise. So our first thing, first, we got a little bit of news dealing with the Chiefs. Chris Jones, who has re-signed his deal with the Chiefs, yes, and is now the highest paid defensive tackle in football.
Yes, sir.
How do we get there? How do we get where we're at?
Hey, man, I guess a little somebody here did say on the show three episodes ago that the Chiefs needed to make Chris Jones an offer that he couldn't refuse, where he will guarantees that he will retire a Chief and he gets the guaranteed money. And on the last episode of the show, which was 2 weeks ago, I did give up a number in guaranteed money that they should at least pay him $84 million within the next 3 years. They're giving him an $11 million more than what I said, which is $95 million guaranteed. That's the Aaron Donald area. As a matter of fact, he is now the highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL. And before the Chris Jones deal, had another guy, a guy that I also mentioned, just in case if we didn't bring back Willie Gay, Drew Tranquil, because when Drew Tranquil signed his deal, then you saw Chris post the photo on social media, you know, before, you know, the news of the Tranquil deal came out, which was him of Andy Reid celebrating the Super Bowl win, you know, Andy on Chris, like, you know, a proud dad, man. And to me, those were the telltale signs that it was all going down, man. And now it's just looking at Snead, bro. And Chris is very important to us, man. I mean, this is like the best defensive tackle in Chiefs history. You know, you got one of the greatest pass rushers in Derek Thomas, you know, Justin Houston's, the Tumba Halees, Jared Allen's. But for Chris to be among those guys, like pass rushers, but in a separate category as the best defensive tackle in team history, and to be considered among the greatest at the position in history, I mean, among the Aaron Donalds, the Warren Sapps of the world. And it's just an amazing thing, man. You know, he's 29. He's made the All-Pro each of the past two seasons, made five consecutive Pro Bowls. I mean, had 10.5 last season after having 15.5 in 2022, man. And, I mean, it means so much to our organization, and I think the respect that he's garnered around the league from guys that have done it at such a high level, what he's accomplished through his 8 years is legendary, even more impressive than Aaron Donald himself. So Veach and company needed to be able to find a solution to get him taken care of, having him continue to lead the way for our team and our defense. The Marisac Nation is here to stay, baby.
There was no doubt. Like, here's the thing. Here's the thing with the Snead and the Jones situation, the stay or go. We talked about that a little while ago.
That's right.
Here's the thing that I have. Veach has been almost legendary with this whole, with finding us corners. Like, he has been, amazing ever since that 1 year where we brought in Revis Island, who was going underwater at the time. What was that,
2017.
You know what? Fast forward. Let's say 2019, 2020, because that was the year. That was the year where we had Scandrick, and that was a black mark on his resume. Ooh, my goodness. But moving forward after that, the 2020 draft was everybody was a shot in the dark.
And, you know,
people that say that the combine is not necessary. Yeah, right. That's not true, because 2020, we didn't have the traditional combine. And I think everybody had many more misses than they would have had it been normal. And Veach found a way to make sure he still hit on things. And when we look at Snead, Snead was a fourth-round projection. You know, fourth-round pick?
Yeah, fourth-round pick.
And he didn't allow a touchdown last season.
No. As a matter of fact, he showed glimpses of that his rookie year. I mean, before he got hurt, he was on the outside and – he was getting picks that way. Like, he was showing that he had the shutdown ability. As a matter of fact, when I had my old Twitter account, I remember I did my research. This is a year before I met Chiefs Focus and met you guys. I remember when I did my measurables, like the thing I'm doing with showing you. His similar measurables was like that of Marshon Lattimore of the Saints. And when I saw that, mm-hmm. I was like, I see what Veach sees that nobody else sees. And we saw it on the field. So Snead just shows you that potential. And that's the thing about these certain players that you're looking for. Either they're rookies and prospects or veterans themselves. You still look at their measurables and see, like, how they compare to other people and how you can use them. And that's why it's important. And Snead showed that the lengthy arms, the closest thing people might have said that he's like a mix of Jalen Ramsey and Marshon Lattimore, but he showed you that he's just as good at those guys. It shows you the great job and the research that Brett Veach and his team does, the scouts doing, putting in the work and looking at those players. And
speaking of which, the Panthers stole our cap guy, which sucks, but, you know, they still, you know, there's always somebody ready to step in, like Andy Reid said, next man up mentality. So, let's move on, man. Let's go to these. That was the news. So next we have our combine standouts. So what we got for our combine standouts?
All right. So when we go to our combine standouts, the NFL combine is over after hundreds of NFL prospects interviewed with teams, took medical tests, performed in multiple drills at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy. Some notable names did not participate in some of the week's events, including top prospects Caleb Williams, Heisman winner Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. The other big names aside that I'm going to talk about here participated and they stood out. But there are five guys that stood out to me and whose trend is going up in a positive direction in their draft stocks. I'll start out with number one, who was my guy, one of my mock picks, and he could still be one of my mock picks now, and that is Xavier Worthy. Anyone who breaks the NFL combine record of the 40-yard dash gets the top spot after racing to a 4.21 second mark on last Saturday. The Texas product became the buzz of the combine. In a league that praises players who can generate explosive plays, he really stands out as a singular big play threat, bro. And, you know, he also had a 41-inch vertical jump, which was fourth among all wideouts. Worthy's gauntlet frame leaves questions on whether he can hold up against press coverage because, you know, he's 165 pounds, especially you talking about going with somebody over the middle. But teams have shown they'll gamble on draft day on a game day speed of a player like him. You know, you saw it with John Ross before. I mean, even though DeSean Jackson was a second round pick, this kid just has more potential. Like he's a one of a kind talent. A one-of-a-kind person. He'll be as good as he gets. If he gets in the NFL, like if the Chiefs get him, he'll easily become a fan favorite with the ball in his hands. He fits best as a shifty slot receiver with that burner speed and big catch radius for a small guy at 165. He could do the gadget things as well as has the excellent open field vision, the start and stop ability, and he could also contribute on special teams as a punt returner.
When I look at Xavier Worthy, I hear 165, and I'm like, oh my goodness, he's small. But we've seen lanky. The best word I have is lanky. Lanky receivers like him make it in this NFL. He'll get into the NFL. He'll put on a little, put on some muscle. gained a little bit of weight. I would say about 10, 15, maybe 20 pounds at the most. And you hope that doesn't affect his speed moving forward. It shouldn't, because he has track speed. I think he broke the con. Didn't he break the 40 combine?
He did.
He broke the record. So what you hope is that he can stay healthy with this frame and be able to make plays for guys, for anybody, whatever team he's with. So that's my thought process on Xavier Worthy. Let's move on to number two.
All right. Well, number two is Kingsley Samaiata. He is from BYU. There is no secret that the Chiefs need offensive line help, mainly at left tackle. Samaiata is an experienced starter at both offensive tackle spots. The Oregon transfer played the 2022 season as the Cougars starter at right tackle before moving to the left side in 2023. The 21-year-old is the cousin of Lions All-Pro right tackle Panay Sewell and was a high school teammate at Rams wide receiver Puka Nacua in Utah. This guy needs technical refinement, but he's got huge size and potential. His physical profile resembles his cousin Sewell himself. However, the numbers say he's faster with a 5.0440, which is 5 seconds faster than Sewell. He's stronger by one bench press rep. Sewell put up 30 bench press reps on 225. This guy put up 31 and even has 1 inch longer arms than his cousin. His cousin has 33 1/4 arms. This guy has 34 1.4 arms. That's an inch bigger arms than Sewell. So when you look at his comparison and his skill set, he reminds me more of Tyler Smith from the Cowboys. You know, both players with the ability to play guard and tackle. And he'd be a valuable pickup for the Chiefs because of that versatility. But with his size, the Chiefs will definitely try to turn him into a left tackle.
Well, first of all, when I saw this guy, when you brought him up to my attention, Sewell was one of my draft crushes in that year that he came out. He was one of the guys that I wish we could go get. Well, there was no chance because we were picking at the last of the first round. He was going to be picked top 10, top 5. And, of course, he did. He went to the Lions. But when I looked at his tape, when I looked at his film, I see almost the same guy. They play similar in that way. And yes, there are some, he is a project. He needs probably a few games under his belt. I would rather a whole season, but you know, he can stand in. I feel if somebody gets injured, and I think he would be a viable backup for this Chiefs team as the guy that either he could be, how can I say this? He could either fill in and end up being the eventual guy at left tackle or he could be your tackle guy of the future, whichever side you want to go to, whether it be right or left, and be one of those Allegretti types and be very successful at it. Because Allegretti is more of your guard. He can do the tackle things. He can do the guard things. But he's probably best at the guard position, filling in on the left or the right, whatever.
Right.
This guy, I feel, could be the Allegretti of the tackle position.
Of the tackle position. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I definitely believe that there is something to that. All right. Now that we're done with are we good with Kingsley?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to our next prospect.
All right. Well, this one is a name that I know Patrick Mahomes is paying attention to because he goes to Patrick Mahomes' alma mater. And I also forgot to mention on the last one, Samaiata goes to Andy Reid's alma mater, BYU.
Yes.
This next prospect comes from QB1's alma mater, and that's Texas Tech edge rusher Miles Cole. There is also, you know, rotational options and our developmental starters on day three. This guy is a designated pass rusher who is best at a 4.3. His speed to power is elite, but his Ben is non-existent, which Felix Anudike Uzama has that this guy doesn't have. And he has trouble finishing sacks because of not having that Ben. He only recorded 3.5 sacks and only had one deflected pass at the line of scrimmage at Texas Tech this last season, while not standing out at the Senior Bowl, but he exploded at the NFL Combine, and he's going to be intriguing a lot of defensive line coaches who would love a chance to get to, you know, develop him. This guy measured at 6'6", 278 pounds, while having 37-inch arms, bro. 37. That's an 86-inch wingspan. Cole also has a 35-inch vertical jump and jumped 10 foot in a broad jump. Just to add that, he ran a 4.67 40-yard dash. To me, I think he's well worth a gamble on that potential, although fans should be cautioned to let him develop slowly. But the thing about him is that some people might say he suits better in a 4.3, but you can work him in a 3.4 as a standing up rushing linebacker, but as a 4.3 edge guy, you could definitely work with him. He might be able to survive as a run defender in a penetrating scheme, but even then, he doesn't have the short area quickness to mirror running backs to tackle them consistently. But having time to learn from Joe Cullen and Chris Jones could be huge for Cole's development.
Look, that was what I was going to mention, is that he has the opportunity to learn from the man, the myth, the legend, Joe Cullen.
Yes, and not sir.
Not to mention with Chris being here for the being a chief for life. Now we're talking about a guy who has now I sound like Chris Collinsworth, but now we're talking about a guy who not only knows how to play the inside, but he knows how to play the outside. And while Chris Jones' best position is the defensive tackle position, having the experience on the inside and outside works in a way that absolutely there are things that he can teach out there on that level. And he might not be the best at it, but hey, you can always – Joe Cullen's going to fill in the gaps there. The dude has a 10-foot broad jump. My God. Dude is jumping out of this world, right?
37-inch arms, bro.
And when you talk about that, when you talk about that, it reminds me of a little less of a project than the gentleman we had. I don't know why his name just escaped.
Joshua Kando.
Man, I had so many.
I know
Joshua Kando. You know,
bro. Me too. Man.
And just for development. But I thought I found out later that you know it wasn't going to be much, which stinks. But between him and the gentleman that left the Chiefs in free agency and went to the Saints.
Nono passing, yo.
Yes. Those two are the guys that I think about when I think about Miles Cole. Just because of the size, the speed, and just the out of this world jumping. I mean, the jumping ability. Like, he's very developmental. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to develop him. But he could be a guy, if he's not going to be a star, he could end up being a guy that you could keep on your roster for a long time and give you decent production at the edge position and possibly move inside if he has the size.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's move on to our next standout.
All right. And this guy and this I like the Chiefs definitely need to look at a running back. Especially somebody to compliment Pacheco, get some competition as well to push for Pacheco's spot. I mean, competition makes perfect. And this guy, the Michigan Wolverine star running back, is my running back one in this NFL draft class. And I know it's a long shot that the Chiefs won't be looking into him, but imagine having Isaiah Pacheco pairing with Blake Corum. That will remind fans of the muscle hamster, Doug Martin. I mean, the guy who was the former All-Pro from 2015, two-time Pro Bowler coming out of Boise State, Corum's measurables are ridiculous. I mean, he ran a 4.53, which is faster than Doug Martin, put up 27 reps on 225. Martin had 28, but Pacheco and Corum both put up the same number, 27 reps. And that's the same amount as the number one offensive line, offensive tackle prospect Notre Dame's Joe Alt put up. That shows that he's faster and stronger than most defensive linemen in the NFL, stronger than certain guys like Bradley Chubb or Joey Bosa, and can outrun them with that first step in the 10-yard split. He ran a 1.58, but that's faster than any defensive lineman in the NFL, especially quicker ones just like the Miles Cole. So you might think that speed is the most important aspect for a running back, but before that speed can be put to use, the ball carrier has to be able to find openings to run through. Corum does that very well. And guys like Lev Bell, Arian Foster, the Frank Gores of the world, the Alfred Morrises, they were four of the best running backs in the NFL a decade ago. One thing they all had in common is amazing vision when asked to find a hole to run through. None of these guys possessed amazing speed, but their ability to stay patient and wait for the hole to open and then explode through it made them highly successful. And like I said, Corum could do that for us. Running backs like Corum can hurt you two ways, rushing or catching the ball. He's a dual threat guy. And that's what he did for the Wolverines to help them win the championship. You know, he has a great low center of gravity. That's why you got that 27 reps, because he has the ability to truck guys and to fight off defenders. And he's got the great vision as far as a cutaway with his cutaway ability. He's also a guy you have to pay attention to on check downs. You know, the Chiefs are known for check downs. He can sneak out of the backfield and run those screens. He's a dynamic player. That's exactly what the Chiefs are looking for. There are other guys like USC's Marshawn Lloyd or Troy's Kiami Vidal to also look at, because they've impressed me, but I like Corum.
With Corum, one of the things I saw was the fact that dude is strong. Dude is super strong. And that catching out of the backfield is one of the things that we were missing, I would say, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to find it. We still haven't tapped into it in the manner that I thought we should. Mm-hmm. And I think we will see that this year, because we no longer have, and by the by, keep in mind, we no longer will be having Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Having another running back in this group, and then Jerick McKinnon coming off an injury-riddled season, also turning another year older. What, I think he'd be 33 this year?
Yeah.
So if you consider all those things, a running back getting picked as a running back is a highly probable thing for the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. But here's my thing. Finding running back one for the Chiefs in Pacheco at the seventh round has been successful. Part of me is like, well, we got a lot of things that we need to address. We got a lot of positions we need to address. And I will put that further down. I will put running back further down on that list. However, with all that being said,
right,
once you brought him to my attention, once I saw exactly what he's able to bring to the game, to the game of Andy Reid, man, the third round pick doesn't seem too bad to me. Like, a third round pick doesn't seem too bad to me to play Corum. Like, especially this last season with Michigan winning that championship. It doesn't seem like a bad pick. And when I think about it, I just think a lot of Clyde Edwards-Helaire regret is there. But seeing him catch out of the backfield really sold me. It sold me on what.
That national championship game, oh, my gosh. He carried Michigan on his back in that game.
Yes, yes. So that really has me intrigued. So we got one more combine standout.
Yes, sir. And last but not least, and to speak on that third-round running back, we'll wait to the next segment to speak on that part, because I got something for you in All Chiefs Kingdom on the next segment. But before we get to that, the last player I'm going to talk about here, and this guy has caught my attention as of late. I mean, and then we're talking about the tight end position, and we all talking about it now because, let's be real, Kelce is one of the greatest, probably the greatest tight end to ever play the game. But we got to remember, he's going to be 35 this coming October. and he's going to play in those last 2 years of his contract. We want his legs to stay fresh, and we need to look at these guys. I mean, you got the guys like the Brock Bowers from Georgia. You got the Theo Johnsons from Penn State. One of my favorites, Dallin Hoker from Colorado State, Ohio State's Kate Stover, Kansas State's Ben Sinat, or Florida State's Jaheim Bell. But you could call this guy who I'm about to bring up a project, but he will be worth the gamble, not only for the Chiefs, but for any team looking for a tight end with all the potential to be a better pro than he was a college player. Rather, Illinois' Fighting Illini tight end Tip Ryman believes birds are real, or whatever, because there's controversy of him believe that birds ain't real. Whether he believes in it or not, he could ball. That's all I care about. I don't care. He could ball. He's 6'5", 271 pounds. He started 28 games for the Fighting Illini, putting up his best season last season with 19 catches, 203 yards, 3 touchdowns. I know that's nothing much to write home about, but he is a massive human, and his body is NFL ready. When I did this research in like trying to find a closest comparison in terms of what he did at the combine, the one player that came in mind was comparing him to, yes, future Hall of Fame tight end Rob Gronkowski, but he is 7 pounds heavier than Gronk. Gronk was 264. This guy's 271. He is faster than Gronk. Gronk ran a 4.68. This guy runs a 4.64. He's stronger than Gronk. Gronk put up 23 reps on 225. This guy put up 28 reps on 225. But they have the same jumping ability. Both Gronk and Ryman have a 33.5-inch vertical jump. And no disrespect to Big Yeti, Travis Kelce, you are the GOAT, bro, who is a better blocker than what people give him credit for. But the Chiefs don't have the type of tight end on the roster with the type of blocking ability upside that Ryman has. When you see him on tape, everybody talk about Brittany Spawn Ford from Minnesota. This is another guy who I think will probably get picked higher than him because the same ability and also the skill set where you say there's that potential as a pass catcher. If the Chiefs want to run more 12 personnel and let Kelce continue to be a receiver and without him having to block, Ryman would be an excellent fit where he would be focused on blocking and sometimes be an occasional open receiver. And he would serve well to develop as a number two while becoming a starter who teams can win with best leveraged in a passing offense that provides a healthy amount of the tight end pass protection with limited releases due to a good combination of pass pro ability. And he also uses good processing to find the open voids in the zone coverage. He finds open spots in zone and does a very good job, and he will lower his shoulder to lay the boom. His best run fit is a zone scheme, which the Chiefs run, where he can stalemate open running lanes. Limited in, you know, hands because he's not much of a catcher. He's more of a blocker than a catcher, and he still has some inability to get movement at the point of attack in a gap scheme. Tight ends could take 2 to 3 years before they really hit their stride. And a pick like between round 4 to 6 for this guy would be a rewarding one for the Chiefs, in my opinion. This could be your future replacement for Kelce here.
Here's my thing. I don't like the talk of trying to replace Kelce. It's not something that I enjoy talking about. You don't replace a guy like Kelce, and I know you know that. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying anything crazy about that. You don't replace Kelce. It's just one of the things you can't do. But trying to find a viable solution as the next guy up is fine. But when people say they need a replacement for Kelce, it ain't happening. It just ain't happening. Now, to be fair, if we look at the Chiefs and how they've operated, sorry about that in the background. My daughter's in the background. If you look at the Chiefs, you know, we had a few tight ends in between the Tony Gonzalez and the Travis Kelce. So there's nothing wrong with trying to find the heir apparent, as it were. But you got to realize trying to find that dude is going to be like a needle in the haystack. But with that being said, Tip Ryman, when I look for when I'm looking for a tight end, because tight ends are one of the one of my favorite positions to evaluate.
Yeah.
Tight end and safety are my two favorite positions to evaluate. But when I look at tight end, I look at his ability to get open.
Right.
Especially in the end zone. Here's my thing. We have been having issues scoring in the red zone.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Where our issues are 60%, where we're only getting 60% in the red zone. And that's a problem for me. That is a huge problem for me.
And we just don't finish when we're in the red zone either, man. It's so irritating.
It's so annoying. So you get guys like a Tip Ryman, and you get and hope he can find pockets in the end zone and make contested catches. It's not something he's going to do on day one. Okay,
no.
These are things that you got to figure out why when you play with Patrick Mahomes and how he operates and how he can look at you from even on the other side of the field. But you just got to figure it out. And one of the things I think we need to figure out is upping our production in the red zone. And he's one of the guys that could do that, could help us do that. And here's a pro comparison. You mentioned that Rob Gronkowski was his pro comparison. So, you know, here's your way, your measurables, your 10-second splits, 40-yard dash, and verticals and all of that. So – it's just one of those things, man. I definitely think he could help us get better in that red zone if he's given the opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, all right. With that being said, that ends our combine standouts for that segment. And now we get into PMax Mock Draft.
There we go, baby. The mock draft. Here we go. So,
and this is 4.0, right?
Yes, it is. It is 4.0. And let me tell you guys a little bit of what I'm going to go with here. So, we've been doing one pick over the last three episodes. And then last episode, we did two picks. So, for this episode,
and let's get this straight. I want to make sure everybody knows. There have been times I've challenged you to do certain things, and so these mock drafts have been like there are times where these guys are places where we're not going to go to get them, but I've challenged you to find us a guy to get certain places. So all the mock drafts are not like real-time mock drafts, so just let y'all know. But this one is a real-time mock draft where this could actually happen. So let's get it going. Yes.
All right. So with this pick, so I'm going to go with number 32 overall, the Kansas City Chiefs select Troy Franklin, wide receiver, Oregon, who was my first pick from episode one. I could have still gone with Xavier Worthy. I mean, Franklin Worthy, doesn't matter. But, you know, I know friends, fans who are watching now are going to give me hell for this, but hear me out on this. Excellent deep threat who can open the field the way Tyreek Hill used to do. I mean, and Worthy is the same way. So we say we could go with Worthy and Franklin just to make fans happy today. So either one. Let's just stick with Franklin. He can open the field deep the same way Tyreek Hill used to do despite his size, and we'll get to that part later. He might be the optimal player to supplement Mahomes' top receiver, Rashee Rice, particularly to help the future Pro Bowler when he gets doubled. Franklin has the 6'2 size, the speed, the 4.4140 they like, and he was excellent for Bo Nix as an X. He needs to bulk up. We all know that. 176 pounds, but let's be real. Worthy needs to bulk up too. So, Worthy, 165. Franklin, 176. That's okay. He can bulk up and work on getting better separation going to the NFL because that's also going to come into question. But his catch radius, his body control, and his run after the catch are all excellent traits that the Chiefs will covet. And this is a no-brainer. And when I did like the little grading between Pro Football Focus, when I chose Worthy at number 32, they gave me a D because he's still like the number 69 overall player. We look at Franklin, they gave me an A plus for this pickup, despite the size. It ain't the size of the dog. It's the size of the heart of the dog.
Absolutely. I definitely scrappy dappy do.
Right.
Little scrappy as it were. But yeah, man, I looked at his tape and I see one of those things. Now, here's my thing. I see exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
I see the player. I see the same things you saw in Xavier Worthy as far as just the creating separation, the degree of catch radius. I see all those things. And yeah, they both need to bulk up. Like, they're both going to have to bulk up for the NFL. It's just inevitable.
Right.
The issue I have with this is that I feel like we, based on what you said, not just based on what you said, but based on what I've seen,
mm-hmm,
if we could finagle our way in the second round, finagle some things and maybe trade up in the second round, I feel like we could get him for a second round pick, as opposed to trying to do it in the first. We pick so late in the first. We're the last pick in the first, so I understand why you would just go with picking him. But if you can get him in the middle of the third, I mean, I'm sorry, you're never going to get him in the third. If you can get him in the middle of the second, I think that's cool. But I understand going ahead and getting him in at 32. I definitely get it, because then you have your Rashee Rice as your physical catch guy over the middle, put him outside, wherever you want to do with him. And then you bring in this guy who's the speedster, and you can put him wherever, because once he gets a year of play under his belt, I feel that he will broaden his scope, as it were. Broaden his, like a Devontae Smith.
My point exactly. He's Devontae Smith might be that small, but he's a ball player. When I saw
Troy Franklin, the first guy I thought of was Devontae Smith. And Devontae Smith came into the draft as one of those smaller guys. And he not only bulked up, but he just ended up getting better and better, better as the years went on, as the few years he's been in the league. So, and he's a deep threat, even with contested balls. So when I see Troy Franklin, my mind goes straight to Devontae.
That's exactly what I saw on tape too, man.
So that's where I'm going with that. So that's not a bad pick in my opinion. A little high for me, but still, he's got all the skills that we need to complement what we already have in style and in the stockades or whatever. So next, who is our next pick? Pick number 64.
Man. All right. Well, with the departure of Mike Dana and with Charles Amonahue recovering from his ACL tear, that leaves George Karlaftis, who got a career-high 10.5 sacks last season, as the defense's only accomplished defensive end. So Braylon Trice, defensive end out of Washington with the number 64 pick, could be a bit raw, but oozes potential, especially after finishing an All-American season and helping the Washington Huskies reach the national championship game against the Michigan Wolverines. Still limit him to mostly passing downs as a rookie, and he might just have double-digit sack potential while learning nuances of the position.
Here's my thing about him. I appreciate what he brings to the table. I just, with the FAU pick last season, and then this pick this season, it would seem as though we're picking up developmental edge position guys. I'm not against it, though. I'm not against it. Please understand I'm not against it, because if you keep picking up these developmental edges, and even if you let them sit for a season,
right,
and on a team that is annually in the championship game, you know, it's a thing for us, you know.
Right.
When you got that, when you got a championship level of play, then it brings on championship level of competition. And these guys are going to play against championship levels of competition, because you're going to get everybody's best shot, especially in this upcoming year where we possibly could go for the three-peat. So with that being said, that could speed up development so much quicker with a guy, and you never hear me go against bringing in developmental guys with a guy like Joe Cullen. Never will you ever hear me say, no, don't do it. So right. if you're going to hear me, if he's going to get picked at number two, you do it while Joe Cullen's in the building. And that's what I like about this pick, is the fact that he is going to be developmental, but he's going to be developmental with Joe Cullen as his coach. So I like the pick. I like the pick.
Mm.
Let's keep it moving.
All right. All right. And last but not least, my last pick of my mock draft, and it goes back to when you referenced running back in the third round. And yes, the Chiefs getting a running back in the third round tradition lives on. And joining Jamaal Charles and Kareem Hunt is none other than the guy we just talked about in the Combine Standout segment, Michigan's Blake Corum. I am going with Blake Corum if he's available at 95. My guy is a powerful between the tackles runner. Like I said, that low center of gravity, good long speed. He is a lot like Doug Martin has. Like I said, that low center of gravity, great vision as far as the cutback ability. And he had limited production as a receiver, though, throughout Michigan. But as you saw in that national championship game, he showed the natural ability to catch the ball and get up field quickly. And he is scheme versatile, but he would be a wrecking ball in space in Andy Reid's scheme. And this is why I'm going with that pick. He was available. He was worth taking a flyer on, and the Chiefs add a player with some dynamic ability into the mix as a backup running back with a chance of actually challenging Pacheco for his spot. So
with that, I, best way I can say it, with Pacheco being picked seventh and Clyde being picked first, you know, you think about it in that manner, and it makes me a little queasy. But with a guy that plays the way he plays, and if Brett Veach decided that that's the way he's going to go, I'm never going to fight him on it. I'm never going to hate on him about it because they see something there that can be tapped into. And it's not like it's a first pick. It's a third-round pick. This is that's Brett Veach's sweet spot, okay? Fourth picks, those are his sweet spot. Two, he's been successful at two, but at the second-round picks. But the third round is where it's just like, man, he almost don't miss. This dude don't miss.
No, he doesn't.
So third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, that's where he really makes his money. And if he decided to pick up a Blake Corum there, I would absolutely trust him because I do see dynamics with him.
I'll be smiling ear to ear, bro. I'm going to be like, NFL really better watch out now. You know you got to worry about the receivers. You know you got to worry about the backfield and Mahomes going to take off. And
that's the part that I think needs to be developed this season is the running back catching out of the backfield and even lining up at the wide receiver's position. Maybe at the X, if we can do it. And then you line him up at the X or even the outside and just see where that could take you. You could do an air raid situation, which is a situation where Patrick Mahomes came out of a Texas Tech. So you get Blake Corum in that five receiver set. Wow. Wow. And then that even opens. I re-looked at the Super Bowl mic'd up.
Yeah.
And they kept forgetting that Patrick Mahomes can run.
Man.
The 49ers kept forgetting that. And if you bring in a guy like Blake Corum to do what he does and even be a wide receiver sometimes, that makes it even more you got to scheme against to make them forget that, hey, Patrick Mahomes can run. So, you know, just more weapons in the arsenal, and I'm here for it. And that absolutely is, I feel like this is a great mock draft, not only guys that can step in right now, but also developmental guys that might not be their top end this season, but they will get there because, shoot, we got 4 years of development with them. So I think that's great. So with that being said, that is the end of the show today, P-Max Mock Draft. I mean, that's the end of that segment, P-Max Mock Draft. But that is the end of today's show, The War Room with P-Mac. We talked about Chris Jones and Snead and how Chris Jones will be staying and Snead might be next. We also talked about a few of the combine standouts that P-Max saw. And then we also, of course, ended with Mock Draft 4.0. So, we want to thank everybody for sticking around and being a part of it. And if you have anything else to say, this is it. This is the time.
All right. Well, everybody, I just want to say happy legal tampering day. Already got some news going out there right now, especially like while me and Thiz was talking, got news like Tony Pollard is going to the Titans. So that's the end of the Derrick yes. Henry era. Also, DeAndre Swift is going to the Chicago Bears. So all these crazy things, man. Baker Mayfield's contract, Jerry Jeudy going from the Broncos to the Browns, and Russell Wilson, dangerous, is going to the Steelers for $1.2 million, and the Denver Broncos got to pay $38 million. It's crazy. So you're going to hear a lot of more news today. So in closing, I want to end it like this. Follow the Chiefs Focus Live YouTube channel. Check out Chiefs Focus Live tomorrow at 8 p.m. Also, check them out on Thursdays. Hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel and don't miss any of our content. And I ain't got nothing else for you guys. But once again, enjoy the legal tampering period and enjoy Wednesday as the new league year starts. And I'll see you next time. Peace out, Chiefs Kingdom.
Deuces.
Deuces.